Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Record. I'm gonna press some sound now.
Yeah. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Although that said, I take this weekend of rugby very, very seriously. Last weekend and this weekend are just incredible. So much rugby. And so much to talk about. Here we are in the rugby dungeon. I'm Tim. That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
That's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And we are currently streaming on YouTube, which we do.
Which we've killed, by the way. Nailed it. Smashed it.
Hopefully, the actual sound and pictures are working right now.
But anyway,
you can find us there. We put videos there through the week. You can leave your comments there. You can find us at Twitter, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter as well. George Brandt, David Peverley are in already. Joe Fallon as well. Who's asked the question, how bad was that Racing game? We will get into that and the rest of the rugby.
Was it that bad?
It was. In a word, yes. No, that wouldn't answer the question in a word.
how bad was that game?
Yes.
Yes.
very. Right. So we're also patreon.com/eggchasers and we humbly appreciate your support. So much rugby.
What can I hear in the background? I can hear something.
We can hear our live stream.
It's fine, I've turned it down.
There we go.
I've got headphones on, so I didn't notice.
Right.
We're a shambles.
We are.
At least you're in shoes this week, JB.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
We haven't even touched the strong zeros.
Not yet.
Stacked up there.
Maybe later on. Yeah, loads of rugby. And good rugby. And also, I think that the extra layer of knockout rugby has made the European Challenge Cup even more exciting. It feels like they've taken it more seriously quicker.
Yeah, we had a few people asking, clearly fans of clubs involved, asking, will you actually mention the Challenge Cup now or will you just use the catch-all thing we've said before, just be better? But I think we will mention it because I agree with you, JB.
Yeah, it's much, much better.
It was really enjoyable. And I think I've probably watched almost as much of the Challenge Cup as the Champions Cup this week.
But I think that could be the paucity of games.
Fewer games and the Friday night game. I always enjoy the 8 p.m. Saturday kickoff.
Love it.
Agreed.
It's a really good time for a fixture.
Before we get on to anything, I know when you watch rugby, you see an array of different haircuts. Like, lockdown has not affected rugby players' ability to have their hair styled in various different ways. But for us mere mortals, happy haircut eve.
Oh, you're going for
haircuts in England, anyway.
I am not going for a haircut tomorrow.
But booked in.
I've not even got one booked in yet. I'm contemplating. What I want to do is, you know, the first game back after pre-season?
Yes.
Everyone's terrible. And I'm imagining that's what the barbers are going to be like. They've had a few months out.
That's a great point.
I'm a bit reluctant to throw myself in at the deep end with an unpracticed barber.
I'm a lamb to the slaughter midday tomorrow.
Are you?
I can't wait.
All the hairdressers are going to be so excited to be talking to different people again, and they're not going to be concentrating properly, are they? They're going to be giddy with excitement.
Exactly.
I might cancel it to the end of the week.
Listen to a thing you're saying.
Yeah. Too early, Tim. You're taking your life in your hands.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Ben Abbott says, Phil, Chris Waddle, Largan. I was thinking it was more Hamish Watson.
I'll definitely take Hamish Watson over Nicola Sturgeon if we're going Scottish lookalikes.
Should we talk about Hamish Watson for a second?
I initially tweeted something about the article from him in the Sunday Times, but then I deleted it because I thought, I don't want to do... I want to live by what I say, and what I say is, don't give people the oxygen of attention because that's all they crave. So I actually deleted the tweet because I thought, even if I want to defend Hamish Watson for not being too small, as Stephen Jones said, I've just mentioned his name. He's got what he wanted.
I think Stephen Jones is right.
No.
I think he's right.
In what way? So I've not actually read the article. Okay. I've seen the headlines.
Okay, so don't get me wrong.
Stephen Jones said he may be the best seven. He may be the best seven in the Six Nations, but he does not deserve to go on the Lions tour because he's too small. Yeah. He said that to get us talking about it, and we've just fallen hook, line, and sinker for it. You didn't fall for it because you agreed with it and you tweeted it. I fell for it and tweeted it and then deleted it. I thought, I'm not going to give him any more attention.
Well, okay, so I'm going to say I didn't read the article because why would I when I've seen a headline? You don't need to. If headline writers want to write headlines, I'm not going to read the article. Simple as that. So I didn't read the article. But the premise is he's too small to play in the Lions, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to extrapolate from that what I want.
Absolutely.
And we'll go from there. So I actually think Hamish Watson is too small to play for the Lions, depending on what you want to do and if you've got anyone equally as small who you rate over him. Because a lot of people have been posting things like, well, he's only 4 kilograms smaller than McCaw, or he's the same size as X, or maybe, Justin Tipperick's too small then. But Hamish Watson is too small if you want to play Justin Tipperick, because you can't play both of them. And that would be my point. Because if we look at the Lions, I'm just trying to think of my biggest Lions team. Or, no, my most likely Lions team, then I'll look at my biggest Lions team.
Most likely back row.
Well, back five. I think the Lions give up about 5 kilograms in every single position.
Apart from, so, Siya Kolisi, who is South African captain.
105.
Yeah, he's only a few kgs heavier than Hamish Watson.
Yeah.
And he's considerably lighter than, for example, Tom Curry, or if you were playing one of the sixes at, one of the locks at number 8, someone like Ty Burn or Mario Itoje or Courtney Laws, he's, I don't know, between 7 and 10 kgs lighter than those guys.
I would just say that this isn't any sort of new wave thinking from a rugby visionary in that article today. He probably wrote the same article about Neil Back about 25 years ago.
Oh, he wrote the same article about Evely Colferns and Dave Atwood saying, why have we wasted these monsters when we're getting melted by France? And this was when, well, mid-downfall. He's been remarkably consistent about the need for big players, and he's wrong about many, many, many things, but he's not wrong about this fundamental truth of rugby, which is big men win rugby games.
But it's all about, the point you mentioned before is the best one. It's all about balance.
Yeah.
Because you can absolutely, in the best teams, you can afford smaller, lighter players in the right positions, provided you've got the balance overall. And I go back to a point I made last week on the archetypal back row of Richard Hill, Lawrence Dallaglio and Neil Back. Neil Back is not a big bloke.
Nope.
But back row and that whole pack had incredible balance.
Yeah.
It's only because Neil Back is not a massive man that Phil stitched him up outside that nightclub that time. What happened again? I can't remember. Where was it?
It was an Oktoberfest evening in Leeds when he was coaching Leeds. And I was a little bit drunk. And he was queuing to get in, and I think I'd gone to try and meet a mate or something in a outside area that was still part of the indoor area. And I said, oh, don't worry, I'll find the biggest bouncer, rugby playing bouncer, and I'll make sure I get you in, Neil. And then probably walked back inside and totally forgot about it.
World Cup winner, wasted outside.
Yeah, he queued for another hour.
Well, the other thing is, quite rightly, WJS on the...
Just out of interest, if there was a rugby playing bouncer on the door, why does he need you to tell him that Neil Back's outside?
Well, I'm thinking inside, not on the door. Because the ones on the door clearly weren't rugby playing bouncers because they'd, not let in Neil Back.
Maybe worse, though. Maybe really messed him up there. Because he might be played in Leeds. Rugby league. We'll show him.
Yeah.
Keep seeing deliberate.
On the door.
Yeah, right. Just before we move on this, WJS makes a good point on the live chat at the minute saying, don't forget South Africa haven't played since November 2019. And now, moving on to the other bit of news, it looks like the Rainbow Cup isn't happening.
Well, as I understand it, the Rainbow Cup can happen, but where the blame lies for this is Westminster rather than one of the Celtic nations, because South Africa wanted to base themselves in Bristol.
So? But why do you think... But hold on, before you start going, because I saw someone say this, don't blame any of the other countries, it's England's fault.
Britain's fault.
No, why do you think South Africa wanted to base themselves in Bristol and not in Cardiff or Edinburgh
Same reason
or
that
Belfast
many,
yeah. or Dublin.
Same reason lots of players want to base themselves outside of Cardiff, Belfast, Edinburgh, or Dublin. Why do they?
Because
transport links, I guess.
Because it would have been even harder. Even harder to get access into the country and stuff. I think England would have been the easier of the four nations, or the 5 nations involved.
They're coming from a country which is struggling with COVID. Mm-hmm. They're coming to a country which is doing okay with COVID ourselves, but then, of course, they're going to be interchanging in and out of the EU, and that's really difficult because they're rubbish with COVID. So, you know, it's really tricky. It's a very, very hard balancing act for them to pull off. As for Bristol as well, it does highlight why the Pro 14 is such a hard tournament for particularly away fans to follow. Because if you want to go to, I don't know, Edinburgh and then play in Llanelli, that's one hell of a trip. You either fly to Bristol and then it's like 2 hours on a bus, or it's, I don't know, how many, God knows how many hours on a bus.
Yeah, historically, obviously, there would be no fans at the moment, although maybe soon. But historically, there's pluses and minuses of the journeys, because you cannot possibly do every week's worth of journeys because it would cost you a fortune to fly across Europe and to South Africa over the past few years. But you can make it, I don't know, a little bit more special. There is something a bit more special than about flying, for example, to your beloved Benetton, the Prosecco region of northern Italy, compared to, I don't know,
Dragons.
Going down...
Dragons.
Well, I know.
Dragons.
Yeah, Dragons.
Newport.
I'm thinking of a tournament that's based in a single country. So, for example, from Worcester to Leicester is slightly less exciting than flying from Belfast to Treviso.
Yeah. Well, strange enough, this is really casting my mind back. There was a guy, I'm trying to get this right now, I think he lived in London, and he was an avid fan of Cowden Beef? Cowden Beef? Is that how you say it?
Beef.
Cowden Beef Football Club. Have I got this right? No. Yes, I have, actually. I'm mixing up two stories. They're very, 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 very similar. No, this guy actually was the one I remember now. He lived in London, but he supported Newcastle. And he would, every week, get on the train to Newcastle to go and meet the Fans Association, to then travel down to various away games, which may well be in London, because that's how into Newcastle that it was.
So you travel up and then back.
Yeah.
What?
And then
to get the bus journey.
And I'm sure there was another one. And the reason I know is Saturday.
This is a very you kind of approach to games. Like, we went all the way to Rome to watch Italy play. I've never seen the Hacker live, and I missed that because you wanted to have a meal before the game. Yeah. And then before half time, you were saying, should we go? Let's go to town.
It's over. I convinced myself that Italy would win that. In the same way, I convinced myself that USA All Blacks would have been competitive in Chicago.
Sadly not.
Sadly not.
But it's still a great spectacle. Both of those were great spectacles.
Yeah, wonderful.
I'm on board with Oliver Davis's petition to start to make sure that the Lions logo is modelled on your mane, Phil. You should keep it until the Lions tour's over.
No chance. It's going before then.
We'll do it in a bit, but just to say, I've got a little quiz.
Ooh, wonderful
quiz I've prepared. Exciting. However, I will, and also to say that coming in your feed very soon this week, I think Wednesday morning, will be a Q&A pod. So we've had so many questions and thoughts and conversation starters and strong zero stories emailed to contact@gmail.com that we're going to delve into some of those. So if you've got anything to say or any thoughts or questions or things that you think might start a good debate, then get it into us on email, contact@gmail.com. Onto the rugby this weekend then. Where do you want to start? Down at Sandy Park?
Can do.
What a game.
Do you know? I think we should start with Sale. And the reason I think we should start with Sale is because it paints a really good picture of what went wrong compared to what went right, which would be the Exeter game. Because I think there's a real...
So start with a negative. That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah. So it's been an interesting week for me because... Well, just tangentially now. I've been a little bit annoyed recently because for the last year I can't go to... Sell Sharks. I used to really enjoy going to press day, and yeah, it was just good fun. You can watch the players train, you can grab an interview, you can do all those really cool things. It's an absolute privilege actually to watch these people train in the flesh. Obviously we can't do that now, but What I have been doing this week is attending the Zoom press conferences. So I was pretty up to date with both Sale Sharks and Exeter Chiefs, and that's awesome because now everybody can basically go to every press conference in the entire Premiership, which is, if you think about it, for rugby fans, that's amazing because every outlet. I mean, I've never seen so many people interested in Sale Sharks. Do you know who asked the first question on the Zoom call? ITV. When's the last time ITV cared about Sale Sharks?
Wow.
Yeah. But because it's easy, everyone can do it. So I hope when all this pandemic shenanigans are over, they do some sort of hybrid press
thing. Where you can attend in person if you want.
Yeah.
And you can still dial in.
It's like literally everyone's attending.
A conversation we had on last week's podcast informed your question. Well, one of your questions, I take it.
Well, yes. So, yes. So I asked Sanderson a question. This is a great place to start this whole dissection of what happened to Sale. I asked a simple question. Are you worried about your physical style up against La Rochelle? And what do you think he said in a word?
didn't you say something about the keep ball alive, KBA?
No. So they cut two different... They cut out my question. Because actually it was just a brutal dismissal, like, no. So I said, are you worried about your physical style or not getting your own way with your physical style? Or, you know, what's the plan B?
Oh, JB, I bet you could love to go back and ask him the same question. So before the game, Alex, I asked you, how do you feel matching up with the physical style and not getting your own way? You said...
No.
You gave me a flat no. What do you say now, Alex?
Well, this is exactly it. So that will be my opening question on Wednesday, right? She said, no. And this press conference went on for quite a bit of time, and what most people took out of it was, oh, there'll be a theme, oh, there'll be this. And I'm thinking, hang on, there's only one thing which is important when you go to La Rochelle. That's not if you've, you know, made greeting cards or you've got a storyboard about what's going to happen. It's, can you win the physical battle?
Well, I've been and worked at La Rochelle, and the only other important thing about that game is the incredible pre-match meal you get if you're press. Claremont, La Rochelle... And Claremont have a restaurant around the corner next to the Michelin factory. They have a restaurant that like press go to, and it's like four courses. They bring you wine.
Oh my goodness, bloody working!
But
and the
cheese.
I guess the coverage of Claremont is fairly favourable.
It's fairly favourable.
Wow.
But La Rochelle had there was like people knocking, having foie gras in like the press room. It's just ridiculous. It's unreal. Anyway.
You don't do that on a Zoom call.
No, you do.
Right. But you're absolutely right, JB.
Well, so my basic thought on this going into the game was, what happens when the players that are used to getting their way on the game line get stopped? What happens then? Is there a plan B? And I do wonder, you know, as for all of this goodness about themes and, you know, knowing each other off the field, now, what was the plan B? Like, where were they going to go afterwards?
Well, didn't Alex Sanderson say in his post-match interview, maybe we need to do a little bit less... What did he say? A bit less...
Personality, was it? Or
he said something like, a little bit less something like that.
Yeah.
Getting to know each other. It wasn't getting to know each other. It was something... It was like a little bit less getting to know each other.
I didn't hear that interview.
And a bit more action or a bit more...
Well, yeah. Because they were okay for the first half. But I just had a feeling watching them, this isn't going their way. And as that pressure turned up on them, I think there was flaws in their character. Because it's easy to run over people when they let you. It's easy to run over Scarlets when they can't be bothered showing up, or Worcester, or whoever it is that you're beating. But when La Rochelle met them, and also they were doing the same to La Rochelle. It wasn't sort of one-way traffic. And the balancing act is, which of these two teams, who are used to getting their own way, perform better when the pressure is on? And we found out.
We definitely have an answer to that now.
Because Sale absolutely collapsed. And, you know, this is why, another thing which Sanderson said, which I think he's 100% right about, is it's a journey when you go to Europe. You've got to go there. And I wasn't convinced on this. I thought that's just something you say as an excuse so you don't have to win. But maybe it's true that you've got to be there and lose badly to understand what it takes to go back there. Because I think a lot of those Sale players had a very rude awakening.
Well, he's been through that process.
Yeah.
With Saracens.
Yeah. The one for me, where it all turned for me, is when one Dupree picked from the base, the next Dupree carried over the line, got held up in the 5 metre line, and then they just looked at each other, hands on hips, and I thought, yeah, this isn't... They need to find something different right now. I think, actually, if Luda's playing, it might have been a different game.
Oh, come on. It wouldn't have changed, been a different result.
I think it...
Nah.
I don't think one player...
I don't think he's worth 30 points.
Yeah, so I just think that these sort of games compound.
Yeah.
So you get past a point of no return and then the score heaps up. I don't think they get past that point of no return. Maybe they do, actually.
He would have... Two of the areas that Sale got bullied, certainly towards the end, were the scrum and the line-out.
Ugh.
And he would shore those up. He doesn't stop the things like the Victor Vito offload for the Gregory Aldrete try.
Oh, I love that.
Which was just... Oh, it's magnificent.
Oh, the scrummaging of La Rochelle.
Yeah.
I was looking at the two teams at the front of the line-out, and Bevan Rod's a big man. But he just looks like... He's exactly the same proportions as Weenie Antonio, just a lot
like
less of him.
80%.
Yeah.
Scale model.
Yeah, literally a 2-to-1 scale model. And then they get into the scrum, and his form looks great to me. I was like, oh, he's in a nice position here. Bam. Just unstoppable. Yeah.
It's the mass. I mean, Bevan Rod is still such a young man.
Yeah.
2021 against Weenie Antonio. Might not have the best scrummaging form, but against world-class scrummaging prop. But he's, what, 25, 30 kilos heavier than Bevan Rod?
He's an enormous man.
And it's not like he's got lighter boys behind him as well. It's an enormous La Rochelle pack.
I do think La Rochelle are going to struggle, though, when they come up against... who are they up against next, actually?
Yeah, they're home to Leinster.
Leinster.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I don't think I need to talk about the Sale Sharks.
Just to be positive about La Rochelle, like, again, Ronan Nagara, his reputation is growing by the day.
I think you need to be careful with this one. I'm not convinced on it. Yes, they really beat Sale badly. I would not be surprised if they themselves get beaten badly against Toulouse.
Yeah, but that would, I think, semi-finals of the Champions Cup for La Rochelle represents a fantastic season already.
Second in the top 14 as well. They'll want to get something out of that.
It's hard to say, you know, you're one game away from a final, it's not a good... This whole keep ball alive thing has been bugging me all week.
Keep ball alive.
Do you know what it means? It means win the game line, you can do what you want. That's what it means. There's no... Nobody says keep ball... You can't play keep ball alive if you're Worcester.
No, it's what you do when you do win the game line. Like, some people's mentalities are such that... And we've seen this with Esterhazen at Quinns and him doing that. And Dom Brandt and Esterhazen between them have been a massive part of this at Quinns, where, yes, you win the game line, you get yourself past it, but what you do then? Do you just keep pumping your legs like Dan Dupree?
Dan Dupree throws offloads everywhere. He needs to stop that.
But that's the point. But actually, and the mindset of Quinns players is just to assume that Dom Brandt or Esterhazen are going to get over the game line. And it's the same with people with Randrandra. We saw the Piers O'Connor try the other week. Assume that he's going to... Take a gamble that he's going to get through that gain line and take the offload, and you're in open space. And that's, I think, what Ronan Nagara is getting at.
Right? Winning the gain line cures many, many ills. You know, very average handling players can look like rugby gods if you've got 5 yards over the gain line and you've got some guy hanging off your back. Just throw the ball. I mean, the real skillful offloads, I would say, are the ones who do it as they're getting smashed. Or have you seen the sneaky ones where they... Between two defenders and kind of...
Sonny Bill style.
I mean, what Sonny Bill does, he does win the game line beautifully, but he doesn't need to. And that's the difference, I think. When Ronan Nagara is talking about keep ball alive and all the journalists are swooning over KBA, it's nonsense. It just means get over the game line.
No, it's a mindset. I think it's a holistic thing.
Do you know what I've also found quite interesting? Alex Anderson did not like... I don't think he liked being asked questions about KBA, because that's sort of like a novelty side thing which another coach has come up with. I don't think he appreciated it
because he wants
the point of difference.
Yeah, he wants the attention for the difference to be on him rather than the opposition.
Yeah, I felt that really got under his skin, actually. I mean, I could be completely wrong on that. That's just me reading between the lines.
He needs a snappy slogan, or he needs to have smelted down his wolf medallion and have a shark medallion to be the talking point.
Get over the effing game line? That'd be my other.
He's got his former defence coach, line speed, more line speed.
Yeah, more lines, just more
or
line
gain
speed.
Line speed.
You should do it like there's that, I don't know what it is, Alan Partridge, whether it's in the day to day or actually in Alan Partridge where he goes, yeah, you. Get the ball to him and then score a goal.
Yeah, exactly. It's simple. More line speed.
Yeah, but fair play, La Rochelle. It's great.
Yeah.
MLS, more line speed.
LTBP.
LTBP, there you go. Perfect.
Perfect.
How can anything go wrong now?
So La Rochelle's opponents will be Leinster, who handily beat the champions.
Now, this is why I wanted to talk about Sale first. because now,
of course,
now we can talk about Exeter and
Leinster.
Here are two teams that know exactly. Well, they don't know exactly what to do, but they have a rough idea of what to do when Plan A fails. And I thought that was a much, much more interesting game for that, because for the life of me, I thought Leinster were done after 10 minutes. They were losing the collisions. Exeter knew they needed to up the intensity even more. And Leinster knew how to deal with that. Even when they were getting bullied, they didn't lose their head. And that was the most impressive thing about the whole performance.
The way that Leinster... You're exactly right. Exeter go 14-0 up after 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was too easy for them. They win the collisions, they win the set piece, and then it just got too easy for them out wide. And they scored two brilliant tries. The first one a little bit fortuitous, because was it Hugo Keenan and then Sexton fall off O'Flaherty, and he just, with two missed tackles in midfield...
O'Flaherty.
Yes.
But then, so Leinster reeling, and they just... I was thinking of the Pat Lam phrase of like... trust the systems, trust the process. They didn't do anything different, Leinster. They consolidated. They trusted their set piece. They trusted phases, actually. Their first try came from, 10, 12 plus phases. And really importantly, they trusted their defence. Because beyond that first 8 minutes, Exeter really struggled to break down that Leinster defence.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agreed. And I thought they were very similar to each other, actually, particularly up front. Like, the back rows seem to be comprised, broadly speaking, the same. They seem to have the same jobs. Yeah, everything looked... They were like a mirror image.
Yeah, there's massive parallels between the way they play. And they play like all the absolute best teams, where you've got the gnarly pack, you've got the electric backs, if you choose to use them. If your pack does enough damage, that will create space for the electric backs, and you can almost flip between the hard nosed stuff and the slightly softer stuff once you've earned the right to do so.
So Baxter was talking in his midweek press conference, and he was breaking down his back row. So he basically told everyone his back row on Wednesday,
which everyone kind of knew anyway.
The amazing thing about Baxter is, like, there is nothing more to know about Exeter. Because we know everything. It's there for everyone to see. It isn't complex. It's just there. And if you ask him a question, he'll give you the most common sense answer that he possibly can. Because, well, that is correct. That's literally what they're going to do. But I did love how he broke down the back row as Sam Simmons obviously does what Sam Simmons does. The Marlin, his key strength is his arrivals. I don't know what that even means. But he arrives in the right place at the right time to do things.
Presumably, rooks and carrion. Clearing rooks and carrion, because that is most of what he does.
Yeah, defensive arrivals and attacking arrivals. I thought, that's a smart way of looking at it.
I think he actually just means that when they do away trips, he's really late arriving to the airport, but always manages to walk straight through.
Perfect.
In times at the departure line as they're getting on the plane.
Like us going to the other one.
Going from Marseille. Going from Marseille to Rome and Rome to
the other one.
Nice,
that's it.
God. I never want to do that again.
Never.
It's like a movie. I've said it before. Je suis en retard.
We know, Tim,
As we're sweating. The looks we got from some French people.
But the thing he did also say is Dave Ewers, and he described him as his gain line monster.
Mm.
And I also like the way that somebody on comms described Ruddock as their version of Ewers. And you look at it and you think, bloody hell, yeah, you're absolutely right.
That is absolutely spot on. And then I guess Conan and Simmons are not similar, but if you compare the kind of Simmons and Van der Flier and Conan and Vermaelen, that's more similar.
So I do think he's wrong there about the balance, because if Dave Ewers is your game line monster, why not have three of them? Why not have Ruddock, Ewers and another?
So Rob Baxter's comments after the game, I think he was absolutely spot on. He said that they went into meltdown mode too early. Well, no, hold on. He said, firstly, they went off script at times, and every time they went off script, it hurt them. And they went into
That's interesting.
They went into meltdown mode too early. The scoreboard wasn't as bad as the players seemed to think it was. We just needed to squeeze a score. So basically, I think, very unlike Exeter, they were forcing the odd thing. up against a brilliant defence. Let's not forget.
But it's interesting that he said they went off script, because I actually think they stuck to the script too rigidly. And what I mean by that is within the last 10 minutes, they had two kickable penalties.
Yeah.
They were 8 points down. Under normal Exeter circumstances, they kick for the corner. And more often than not, they will score a try. They kick for the corner twice or possibly even three times and failed on all of them because errors were forced. Had they have not stuck to the script and taken the three, they're within a single score. And I know that's not the Exeter way, but Exeter aren't always playing, what, Leinster, four times European champions?
Yeah, so, okay, mixed thoughts on that. Just from a psychological point of view, if you kick your points, what message does that send? Do you feel panicked or uncomfortable because you know you're not doing Exeter things?
Well, so I understand that argument, and it's like you have to back yourself. You have to trust your systems, which is something I said again earlier, and something that Leinster did. But there's a trust in the systems, and then there's just a pure reality. And the reality is that Exeter, when they are playing, just say, a normal Premiership game, their line-out success, their scrum success, their ruck success, their gain line success will be 95 to 100%. Because they're playing Leinster, all of those numbers drop down by 10%. So you're 10% less likely to win the line-out, you're 10% less likely to win the scrum, 10% less likely to win the gain line. And when you compound that up across the number of phases that Exeter have to go through to get those scores, it means you're not just 10% less likely to score, you are considerably less likely to score. And I think Exeter had to take the three that frame of mind.
I hadn't thought of that, but I think you're right, because the consequences of Exeter scoring the three means that Leinster know one score and we lose.
Yeah.
But the consequence of Exeter going for it and failing is a massive psychological boost.
Oh, the boost for Leinster. When they twice did it, they twice stopped them in the 22. That is huge. And that changed the game.
But that reminds me of the Saracens game.
That's a great shout.
They weren't in Saracens game against Saracens a few years ago. And they kept going to the corner. And it was the build-up of pressure in the corner, even though they didn't score every one of those times, that led to that victory.
Because on top of that, there's also the semi-final and the final of Europe last season against Toulouse and whoever was in it. Was it Racing 92?
Yes, in the final it was Racing.
Yeah, which they did the same, like they trusted the Exeter system. So maybe I'm looking at this with perfect 2020 hindsight.
Yeah,
because you're exactly right, Jade. They've done this before. They've done the Exeter way before, and it has led to success.
Yeah, I would take the points. I would always take in knockout rugby, I would always take the points.
Yeah, but Exeter have done it. They've always done it the Exeter way, and it has both worked and failed now. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean one is right and one is wrong, but had they taken the points initially in this, I kind of would have backed them to get that score, because then they know they only need that one score.
What was their scoreline position at that time?
It was
eight down, wasn't it?
They were eight down, but was it like 21-29 or something like that? 20-29. What did Exeter? Finished on?
I think 22. Exeter finished on
22. It's 22-30 then.
I think the better strategy.
They finished on 34, so it must have been. I can't remember now.
Well, ultimately, the best strategy is not to throw away a 14-point lead.
That's an even better strategy.
That's what I would say. If you keep your 14 points and you stop them scoring any...
They were 9 points down, Phil, but same point. They were 31-22 down.
Right, OK.
But same difference.
Yeah, It doesn't change the logic.
I think Robbie Henshaw hit the nail on the head, and what a game he had at both sides of the ball. But he said it was right up there with international standard.
That
was as close as you get without being an actual international.
In fact, at some points, particularly the opening 30, I would say, the way Exeter were playing, I wonder if they punched themselves out a bit, because they were so physical. Johnny Hill, I don't know how you continue to play like that for 80 minutes, actually.
Yeah.
I'm so relieved he didn't get a yellow or red card. That could have been an awful thing to be talking about post-game when he got that penalty for the... in my opinion, a legitimate hit with the arm wrapping and making contact. That's a really tough one, because we saw that a couple of times in different games.
We saw it twice in this game, because Kirsten did carbon exactly copy the same, of yeah. it. Yeah, it was almost, Kirsten was slightly more upright. Well, I actually would have been, I would have been okay with a yellow. I think the penalty only, I was very surprised, I think is the right call, but I would have been okay. And it's, it comes down to this subjective element of the guidelines of the laws, which is the force applied to it. So is it low force, in which it's a penalty, medium force, it's a yellow card, and high force, it's a red, subject then to mitigation, which can mitigate it down.
I noticed, in fact, I think all of the French referees, there was one in the Northampton-Ulster game as well, he used this phrase a few times, I think I heard it in the Exeter game, an accident. It was an accident.
Yeah, which is
I quite like that. But I mean, as you've pointed out, intent is kind of irrelevant, and the framework's meant to be there to take it away. But as it happened, I quite like a little bit of feeling accidents. Added to it, not just a flow chart.
I dislike the phrase accident. Well, I much prefer the one that you came up with. This was years ago, but it has crept into common parlance actually, which is a rugby incident. And the Morgan Parra, he got his head clipped by someone's hip. I can't remember who it was. Was it the 12 Aki in the Clermont-Toulouse game? And that was a total rugby incident. Parra went down rightly holding his head because it hit against someone else's hip. It was no one's fault. There shouldn't have been a penalty or a yellow or a red. And it was just purely a rugby incident, which there are risks in rugby that we all know about, and it happens.
You've got to say fair play to Leinster, because they didn't play last week. They rolled over Munster the week prior. They're potentially not going to play again. Well, no, they'll probably play some of the inter-provincial games.
They've got a
semi in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, they've got 2 weeks. I think they'll play one game in the Rainbow Cup if it all takes place.
If it doesn't? They just extend the Pro 14.
What I reckon...
The Pro 14's done.
Well, I reckon... They erase the final and just add some more games to this.
I was thinking about this. If they do cancel the whole Rainbow Cup, and then, like...
What a farce.
Have they spent... I bet the Welsh regions have spent the money already that they thought they were getting for the TV for that already.
By the way, have you heard the story coming out of Llanelli, the Scarlets, about last week's game?
Getting pumped by Sale?
The Welsh lads were using Welsh national calls. I mean, if that's true, that is staggering. That is staggering.
How many Welsh guys were there? There's Halfpenny, Williams, Davis.
Davis who came on. Johnny Williams has been in the Welsh squad.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few of them. But, like, that can't be a real thing, can it? Surely Gareth Davis would be another one.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, sorry, that's who I meant, Gareth Davis.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking this through logically now. And... Well, yeah. If you're banging the drum about getting all the internationals back so it raises the profile of the game in Wales and the regions get stronger, surely they would have been better off without playing these players? And the week before last, they didn't have a game because it was...
The final.
Final of the Pro 14.
Yeah.
So what on earth were they doing? Like, the chief executive came out and said, oh, they're all knackered and they had to decompress after... Six Nations. Well, don't have them then. Don't ransom their careers. If you don't think they're any good for Europe because they're decompressing like a deep sea diver, then what was the point in this whole escapade? Why aren't Leinster feeling like that? Or why aren't Munster feeling like that? The whole thing's a farce.
Why aren't DuPont and Entomac feeling like that?
Yeah, decompressing. if they've used the wrong calls, my God. And not just once. It sounds like what the chief executive was saying. It was the whole game. Like, at some point, you're going to realise you're not playing in the Millennium Stadium.
I now want to go to Scarlets and do like. Now let's go down to Timmy's pitch side. Yeah, I'm hearing this next to the hyperbaric decompression chamber. Lee,
what is this,
Lee?
What is this idea of decompressing? Like, come on, professional rugby player.
Anyway. Decompression from the celebrations, I could possibly understand.
Oh, do you know?
I reckon that what they might actually be getting at with that is the boys can't go out for a beer after the game. They can't go and get in amongst
it. Can't go wild. Well, actually, I do have, after mocking the decompression thing, I did a story about Tom Curry, which was raised in, was it last week or this week? It was this week. Usually he comes back from Six Nations and the pressure is so great, he is ill, like actually like flu symptoms the week after.
Oh,
so like, the pressure is real, I guess.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, he still played. right? And Ireland, all the Irish players still played. Everyone still bloody played, so...
Well, the Irish players played the Pro 14 final.
Yeah.
Probably more Munster than a few of them didn't. A few didn't, but all the Munster lads did. Henshaw did, Hugo Keenan did. A load of them were on the bench for Leinster.
I mean, assuming they were fully compressed when they played. Maybe that's what they did. Maybe it was a partial state of compression. Oh, yeah.
Is that more or less dangerous?
No idea.
It was. I think it was quite deliberate of us to put Phil closest to the camera on the YouTube live stream, because that's what a lot of the comments are about. Is Phil trying to get in the Exeter side himself with that Barnett? Says Penn the Big. And Ed McComber. Sorry if I'm not saying that right. Phil, us dad bod gents would greatly appreciate less bicep flexing. Yeah,
more bicep flexing.
We'll enforce long sleeves in future videos.
Like, more than Steve Diamond, long sleeve polo shirt for BT Sport, nailing it again.
Dimes.
Mm-hmm. Nailing it again.
I like him as a pundit.
Brilliant as a pundit, isn't he? Yeah. I honestly think he's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. He's good value because he's just...
He nails it.
He's knowledgeable, but he's also entertaining.
Yeah.
I'd loved it if he would have said, nah, it wouldn't have happened on my watch, that. Yeah. No way, it wouldn't have happened on my watch. My team would have got rolled over like that.
I know he was thinking it.
I know exactly what I was thinking. Oh, can you talk about
I'm intrigued.
Became aware on Thursday night, was it?
Thursday night, yeah.
Yeah, that I won't go into any details about how I know this, but that Sale were requesting to transport what looked like a World War II shell.
It was a World War II bomb. Bomb casing.
Someone asked a question about this in the comments. Is that like a well-known thing? I haven't heard this.
I believe it's one of Sanderson's themes.
He wanted to transport a World War II bomb shell, not a bomb. Yeah, it was a shell of a bomb.
It was the metal casing.
The metal casing of a bomb. He wanted to take that with them on the plane to La Rochelle.
Now, I looked at it, I thought, that looks like an artillery shell to me. It looks like an artillery shell casing because of the bands, but no, it was apparently...
There's some of those... certain type of rugby fans that hate even the mention of battle or stuff like that. They hate all that war imagery being mentioned.
Yeah, they're not fans.
They hate it.
Yeah.
They would have hated this.
Oh, God. Imagine. But then Alex Anderson says it. So what do they do now? They're torn.
Yeah.
It's Anderson said it. Yeah. Anyway, it didn't help Sale, clearly.
No, I...
Well, did they get the World War II shell there or did they not?
I believe so. Yeah.
Wow.
God, I really want to go to La Rochelle.
I'd love to go to La Rochelle. When they've got a crowd in as well.
They should have got like a landing craft on wheels to drive them onto the pitch. drop the barrier.
So, I told you on my other podcast, pilot episodes, a few months ago now, maybe six weeks ago, we interviewed a guy from 617 Squadron. Who fought in the Second World War, and he was obviously 617.
You spoke to him on the show, and how old is he now?
He's in his 90s.
Yeah, there's not many left, is there?
No, there is not.
God, it's really sad that.
Yeah, well,
it's good though. It's important to get the stories while we can.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So he was 617, which was dam busters.
Wow. And,
but he didn't actually drop any bombs on the dams. He joined after that raid.
Okay.
So his job was dropping these enormous tall boy bombs. On La Rochelle, that is literally what they were doing, which is why it's a race. Like, how many bombs can you drop on a U-boat pen in La Rochelle compared to how quickly can German engineers rebuild them with more concrete?
Wow!
Yeah, I bet Ray's prefab would be very useful,
very handy.
Yeah.
If you're going to build any U-boat pens, get in touch. Slide into my DMs
for a little weekend away. It's one of those towns, like the ground and the stadium and on a match day is incredible. It's a really small town, so you'd probably thought, oh, I could do with like a few more bars and stuff. It's quite small, but beautiful. It's like one of those, if you had to combine your love of rugby with a romantic weekend away, La Rochelle would be a good spot.
Have you been to Toulouse yet?
No, I really want to do that one.
Yeah, that's the other one I really...
Toulouse and Bordeaux, the two grounds that are meant to be incredible on match day that I've not done.
So I've only flown out of Toulouse, and there is a club shop in the airport. Toulouse airport. That's where I got my, do you remember my Toulouse tie?
Yeah.
Which is very smart. I'm just looking, actually, because I was just thinking La Rochelle and Bordeaux, they're both on the west coast.
Yes.
Halfway up.
Go on.
Well, it's 100 miles or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's two-hour drive between the two. And what is slap bang in the middle of the two, if we're going to do a tour?
Now, my geography of France isn't very good. Italy.
No, the west coast of France in the middle of the two.
In between the two.
It's not
a rugby ground. It's something that we might... It's maybe an activity, perhaps.
Oh, right. No, hold on. So I know that near La Rochelle, they have... what's that drink that they have that they make there? The brand, not brandy, is it?
It's not brandy, but no. it's what's a French
Courvoisier.
Brandy.
No.
Yeah, well Courvoisier is a cognac.
Cognac.
I'm just looking here of our route from, if we were to go, of course, do a Friday night game in La Rochelle and then drive to Bordeaux, the cognac region is just right around here.
Do they do Thursday night games in top 14?
In Pro de Deux.
Pro de Deux, top, yeah.
So then, the French TV deal has...
You could do Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
The French, you know how many games we've had the last two weekends, like 16 games? That's every single weekend on Canal Plus in France, because the French TV deal is 35% of the money goes to the second division, 65% to the first division, and they broadcast
everything.
Game.
Wow. So I'm not being ungrateful, Phil. Thank you for looking. But I'm wondering, is there a way that we can watch Friday night, Thursday night, Friday night?
Yeah, well, do you know...
I end up in Barcelona. That's what I'm asking.
Do you know, an emerging part of France as a rugby region is like Brittany in the north coast, which is not a hotbed of rugby traditionally.
Yeah.
But like Vannes is the place where Nick Abandonen is, and where there's a player...
Trinder.
There's a player, Henry Trinder's just gone on loan.
Yeah, yeah. And Rouen is where...
Carl Ferns was Newcastle.
Yeah,
which I still don't think
hasn't
announced.
Been announced. No,
but he is in. It was 1st of April, so he is there.
Yeah, I've got a little quiz before we get onto the other two.
Beautiful.
The other two games.
Go for
it. Because there's the Challenge Cup as well.
Do we need pen and paper or
phones?
I can get up a
Get up a Word document. Get your phone up. And what this is? This was. This is nicknames of players. So I'm going to give you the nickname. You're going to tell me the player.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember why this happened. There was a reason why this came up.
Please don't tell me you've included Paddy Jackson or Israel Folau in this quiz.
No, definitely not, mate. Don't worry. The first one is the chiropractor.
Oh, okay.
Which rugby player is known as the chiropractor?
Yeah.
Okay, so write that one down.
Okay.
Question two, Bam Bam.
Oh!
Which rugby player... is affectionately known, or was affectionately known, either or, as Bam Bam by his teammates. Third one, Mad Dog. Mad Dog.
Mad Dog. Mad Dog.
Oh, I know. I'm, every one of these...
I'll probably kick myself when you tell me this. Okay.
Go on.
Okay, the next one is the Raging Potato.
Okay.
Okay.
Wait. Yeah.
Okay. Raging Potato. Next one is... OTG. OTG. If you know, do you know it? I'm looking at you because I'll tell you what OTG stands for and then...
I don't know it.
Okay. Only the Good.
Oh, no idea.
Only the Good. He was known as by his teammates in one particular team. Only the Good. OTG.
No idea.
Okay. Next one. The Fun Bus.
Okay.
These range from reasonably easy to incredibly hard in my mind.
Next one. Wig. I'll give you a clue on that one. He listens to the podcast.
Oh.
Regularly. He is a regular. He's a proper listener.
Give me one second.
To the point, he. No, I'm not going to say anything. No, don't worry. Okay. Wig. Dan Carter, yes. him and Bowden both have egg chasers ties. Yeah. I wonder.
No, he doesn't. Dan Carter doesn't.
Dan Carter doesn't. Bodie does. Bodie and Rico Ioane.
And McCaw.
Richie McCaw. Yeah, you're right.
He wears it whilst flying.
Yeah. Wig.
Wait. Yeah, okay. Got it.
Rikishi. So this person has two nicknames. He's sometimes known as Rikishi. He's also known as Jukebox.
Jukebox.
Oh. Rikishi and Jukebox.
Okay. Okay.
That's eight. And the only other one is Nobody. And this one was coined by the press, actually, not by his teammates, but this particular player who... all right, I'll give you a clue on this one.
No, it's fine. You're fine with that one.
Do you know that one?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Nobody then. Right, that's fine. That's nine.
I'd have the clue if you're going to give it.
I'll save number 10 in case we need a tiebreaker.
We probably won't.
So you got them written down, yeah?
Yeah.
Chiropractor, Bam Bam, Mad Dog, The Raging Potato, OTG, The Fumbush, Wig, Rikishi and Jukebox, and Nobody. Okay, the chiropractor.
Brian Lima.
Yeah.
Correct. You both got that written down. Good. One all. Bam Bam. JB, you look less sure.
I'm not sure at all.
Steph Armitage?
No.
I've put Stephen Ferris.
It's David Pocock was known by his Aussie teammates. But apparently he was really clumsy and would injure his teammates in training. They called him Bam Bam.
Oh, yes! Yes!
What?
Oh, just remembered the next one.
Okay, Mad Dog. Phil.
I've put Keith Wood.
Oh, you're going to kick yourself.
Lewis Moody.
Correct.
Oh, Mad Dog Moody. Oh, my God.
2-1 to JB. The Raging Potato.
Ty Furlong.
Oh, it is Ty Furlong. I was going to say Rory Best.
It's Keith Wood.
Oh,
yes. Thank God.
That one was... I think that was coined when he was on the Lions tour in 97. Raging Potato. Before political correctness, basically. OTG, Only the Good. You're going to kick yourself if you don't get it.
Dan Carter.
No.
I put Nick Evans. But...
Only the Good. Die Young.
Oh.
Still 2-1, JB. The Fun Bus.
Jason Leonard.
Jason Leonard. 3-2, JB. Wig.
Is it Roundtree?
I've put Roundtree.
You're both correct.
Yes.
4-3 JB. Graham Roundtree, known as Wig, because apparently when he had his hair, when his hair grew when he was back at Leicester, it used to grow in loads of different directions. So it just looked like when his hair grows out, it looks like he has a wig. Rikishi / Jukebox.
This has to be Trevor Liotta.
I've put Trevor Liotta.
Oh, I see why you're saying it. No, it's Tiger Furlong.
Oh, what?
That's what he's known as. Apparently. And finally then, I think JB's going to win this one if he knows this last one. Do you know Nobody?
I've put something, but I don't know it. Well, I've put Freddie Burns, but I've not. I'm just a total guess.
Nobody, because nobody's perfect, right?
Nobody's perfect,
so
correct.
It's a 10. I'm sure it's a 10, but I can't like for me remember which one it is.
Unless it's... Who have you put?
I've not put anyone yet.
It was coined by the Australian press Liner? On their World Cup winning captain, two-time World Cup winning captain.
Oh, it's John Eales.
John Eales.
Damn it. I knew it was someone Southern Hemisphere.
I can't remember the reason why I came up with that, but it was something over the weekend that happened.
Was it someone's nickname?
That made me think about nicknames, yeah. Mm. Anyway, never mind. Anyway,
good,
right.
Good quiz.
Oh, well, you missed some belters there. King of Wilmslow.
Sam James.
Sam James. There's loads.
Lord Hammer of Hammershire.
Yeah, might get that one. Yeah, if you should have called me first.
It's not really a quiz if you two are both in on it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, we've got those two games today in the other semi-finals. Who would have predicted that with those four teams playing and that amount of attacking talent on, you would have 78 points scored all from penalty kicks and one drop goal?
Yeah, it's interesting, wasn't it?
Zero tries.
I would not have predicted it.
I mean, you'd got unbelievable odds on that.
Yeah, I really would not have predicted it. And I was watching these games, particularly the second one, trying to work out why. And I wonder, because it's not... I wonder if it's the French-on-French thing, because certainly La Rochelle did not...
Don't talk to us about your favourite subcategory on exotic websites, Phil.
But I wondered, and I was watching this thinking, are they too afraid of losing to really go out and win? And I mean that in two regards. One, that... the pressure came on and all four teams in multiple different scenarios blew good chances. Like, even if you just watch the last 10 minutes of Clermont-Toulouse, there's a break down the left wing by Matsushima when Dupont makes a really good tackle on the reserve second row late on.
Jedrosak,
yeah. And then the final play of the game, when Toulouse have already won it, they have a 2-on-1 to score a try and blow that. And it's... Even if you just say that little 10 minutes, the pressure was on them so that they were making mistakes. And not just those 2-on-1s missed or those breaks missed. The flip side of it was there were quite a lot of cynical penalties given away when teams got into the red zone, because they were almost happy to give away the 3 points, and in some cases even the yellow card and 3 points, rather than concede the try. And I just wonder how much of it was the dual French, the pride of playing your fellow countrymen.
I wonder whether any sort of element, and I'm not trying to overplay this, I think it's only a small fraction, but how much of an element was, comparatively, we saw from some of the other games, the French refs just let stuff go sometimes.
Yeah, they do. That might be why the top 14 is growing so fast.
Maybe.
It could be that. I mean, I think the French teams are very reactive. They know they can score when they want to. That's why you have the games that you do against Sale, or the ones from last weekend where tries were fairly abundant, and they look like proper cup games. I think when they face off against each other, they know exactly what's coming, and to a large degree, they cancel each other out. But when they play Leinster, or when they play whoever it is they're going to play next, I think you will see plenty of tries if the other team scores tries.
The Bordeaux game was dire as a rugby game. That was
it was quite
bad.
Intense, though.
It was intense, but it was so stop-start.
Yeah. But I think a lot of these edgy games are. It's just the nature of the beast.
They can be. And if you wind it back to the World Cup final 18 months ago, and so not necessarily even the World Cup final, but like the
semi-final. Can we talk about the semi-final instead?
Yeah.
I'd much prefer that.
Like the semi-final, but historically, semi-finals, finals... The South Africa-Wales game was one of the best examples. That was just a total arm wrestle. Delicious arm wrestle.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, look at the first half of the Sale game. There were tries, but it was very stop-stop, particularly the first 20 when they're trying to work out, are these guys really as good as we think? Carrying, Sale are doing the same thing. And it's not until they settled down and they really worked each other out, you started to see the game flow. With the French teams, they're just so massive, you know. Toulouse are massive, Clermont are massive. What did you expect?
And they don't have to work each other out, because they play each other twice a year, every year, so they know exactly what's coming. But yeah, it was surprising, because that Clermont and Toulouse game and the other game, the Bordeaux and Racing 92 game, there's so much firepower in all of those teams.
There wasn't Finn Russell, Vakatawa, and who's the other centre for Racing?
Christ, yeah.
They really missed those two. Who's the 12th? Who's the 12th for... Because it's not Fiku, because he's going there next season. But
No.
Who's the 12th? That's a great question. I do know. I know.
Anyway, neither of the centres. Well, the whole midfield was not there for Racing, and that's massive.
Did Curly Beale play?
And Iribarren, we haven't seen him as well. So that's like the 9, 10, 12, yeah. 13, all
yeah.
out.
Yeah, Machinot played. But
not bad replacement.
Not bad. Yeah, KB did play in the centre because of the missing centres.
Yeah, that's right. Can't remember the 12, but anyway.
Yeah,
doesn't matter. But yeah, Racing will be absolutely devoed. I think
Racing are the new Claremont, who are also the old Claremont.
Yeah, Claremont are still Claremont.
But,
yeah.
But a shootout for the fifth star between Leinster Toulouse would be immense. The only downside is it's going to be played at one of their grounds, which I don't like. I don't like that. I mean, it's better than playing it in Marseille. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And Exeter had that advantage last year, didn't they?
Yeah.
You want to take it to a premium stadium, don't you?
But like,
AJ Bell.
Presumably, it'll just be a coin toss for the whoever gets the home final, because there's no seeding now, because it's all been, and there was no seeding really, because we only ever played two group stages.
It was quite cool to see. I've never seen a rugby draw before with the balls in the hat.
I did enjoy it.
Well, they do it for the World Cup, but a club one.
Yeah. Live on TV.
I did like the cuts away to just say, we have got someone who's an official adjudicator. Cut to woman stood in corner, looking stern. That's good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Where do they get these people from? Isn't it KPMG? Like, literally. It is.
It wouldn't surprise me if it was, one of the big four.
Yeah, because when you need something, like, audited, you go to these people. Because, where would you find them from?
Yeah.
The Government Auditing Service.
Yeah. Is there an international audit service of sporting events?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. The National Lottery get their people from either KPMG or Pricewaterhouse, and they look very sternly at the balls as they come out. So, just on the travel for the European Cup, do you know what I saw on Thursday night?
A World War II bomb being driven to Manchester Airport?
Was Tuesday night. There you are. It was Tuesday night. Right? So I'm driving around late at night, lurking around
in the shadows,
but just round the back of Piccadilly Station through the archways.
No, but
that's a local reference. But there's every city has these kind of areas.
But I imagine that this convoy did originate from around that area. So,
oh, you told me this.
Yeah,
this is
mad. And I don't know if I've got this right or not. But I overtook the Borussia Dortmund buses. Borussia Dortmund had two or three buses in convoy on the 56. And this was about 11 o'clock at night, so I finished rugby training. I was driving home, so it must have been like 10:30. And there were two Borussia Dortmund buses. Now, here's my question. Because I Googled them as soon as I got home, and they are the Borussia Dortmund buses. They weren't just like painted up as a gimmick for someone else. Have the team, because of COVID, travelled on these two buses? Why would you need two buses for a football team? It's a football team, 11 aside. Or do football teams drive their buses empty across Europe?
Yeah, and what would be the cheaper solution to pay a driver and all the fuel and all the toll charges and all the crossing and everything to drive a bus there and all the way back to Germany, or to wrap a native bus in Manchester with Borussia Dortmund stuff?
That's exactly it.
But you'd have to wrap one in Manchester and then in Rome and then Milan.
Yeah, but nevertheless, which would be the most economically viable?
I suspect the former. I suspect driving them.
Wow.
I don't know.
I thought maybe because it's COVID. So
Put the poor fella, he's at the training ground on a Monday. See you later, lads. See you Wednesday, lads.
Yeah. rugby teams do actually drive their kit, don't they?
Yeah.
So
I wonder if they did, because they'll have a lot of training gear. If the players fly and they send a lot of the gear.
That would make sense.
That would make sense.
Worcester did like an epic to France somewhere. And they left them Wednesday.
Yeah, who went to Krasna? No, not that one.
The
place in Russia.
Krasnyar. Connacht went out there, didn't they?
Yeah.
No, did they do Krasnyar?
It was like a team like Worcester or something, spent about 2.5 days getting there.
Worcester that did it in France. They had a Thursday, starting on Thursday. Well, when was it? Maybe a Monday for Thursday night game, because it was the Challenge Cup.
I mean, it's the same for me when, back in the olden days, it's the same for me just getting to the AJ Bell.
So, a lad I work with is a Liverpool season ticket holder, massive fan. He went to the cup final in the Ukraine a few years ago, and he's only a young lad, and it was because getting to Ukraine is, well, there's very few flights. There's loads of charter flights, but there's still very few for 50 plus thousand Liverpool fans, and it was like over a grand, £2,000 a ticket. So he paid, I think it was only about £200 for a bus to the Ukraine.
I remember hearing about back. People doing this.
Oh my God.
And so
I don't get, like, halfway along that journey, I'm like, any amount of money, I don't get, I'll pay £4,000, just make this end now.
So I think it was, so the game was like 9:30 at night, Ukraine time, on the Saturday night. I think he met at Anfield 6 a.m. on the Wednesday morning.
Oh God.
Travels all day Wednesday, all day Thursday, all day Friday. They had like a 8 hour stop off in Warsaw, I think, on the Thursday or the Friday.
8 hour stop off at Warsaw.
Yeah, it was like in the middle of the day. It wasn't like an overnight stop off, middle of the day. Travels all day Friday, all night Friday, all day Saturday. Arrives in Ukraine, Kiev, I think it was, 2 hours before kickoff. Sees the game, is on the bus an hour after kickoff. This is the one that
after
Liverpool.
Full time.
Why?
An hour after full time. This is the one that Liverpool lost against Real Madrid.
Oh my God.
And so the whole thing in reverse gets back on like the Tuesday afternoon.
Oh my God.
No, 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 no.
It's like torture.
It is, isn't it? Why are we holding the Ukraine? People are so corrupt.
UEFA.
UEFA.
FIFA is so corrupt.
That is the most extreme example of sometimes I've regretted when I've gone. Rather than paying like £50 more or whatever it is, £100 more for a flight out of Gatwick or Heathrow, and I've gone to Stansted or Luton, and just like what when I'm on my way there, going what why did I do this?
Yeah. How invaluable is my time?
Yeah, exactly. what have I done?
Yeah, well, talking about invaluable time, the Challenge Cup.
can we just for a second talk about Jelly Bear, who was the best player on the pitch for Bordeaux?
Yes.
I think he was quality. That kick at the end, 54 metres with that much pressure on him, that was amazing.
But has he always been at Bordeaux, Jolibert?
Don't know.
I think so, yeah. He came through as a kid. I remember seeing him play away at Newcastle in the Challenge Cup a few years ago. And he was that's like one of his first games.
Because Sarin was Bordeaux, wasn't he?
So he's Bordeaux.
Baptiste Sarin,
Bordeaux from when he was 9 years old, according to this.
Crikey. That's a wise investment.
Mm. Mm.
So go on. You want to talk about Jolibert?
Well, just that, really. Just that. I think he was excellent. He played really well. He was unlucky. There's an amazing try-saving tackle on him halfway through the second half. But then that kick at the end of the game was awesome.
Yeah.
High pressure, and he nailed it.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's why they pay him the big bucks since 9 years old. Already a long career.
Yeah. Challenge Cup.
So, my favourite game of this week's Challenge Cup was. Actually, two.
Ulster.
You enjoyed Leicester.
I did enjoy Leicester.
Bullying Newcastle.
Yeah. I thought this was a great game.
It is a reminder, that game, that some things don't change. And having tight heads that can bully the opposite tight head makes a big difference in rugby union.
It's a simple formula, isn't it? They've got a guy who knows what they're doing now. They've got a couple of guys that know what they're doing. They've built a decent squad. And I think this week, it's such a fascinating game because this week they had that loaded bench. But they need to make sure now that, okay, we've got a 15 that can roughly play, they think. I don't think they're entirely sure, but there or thereabouts.
Solid 15.
More than that, do you know what? I've got a... Well, I'm not taking anything back because I never said anything critical, but I've got to say I've underestimated Steve Borthwick big time.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Because, fair play. He kept a stacked bench, but I genuinely don't think Leicester currently have an A and a B team. And that is an amazing place to be. Yeah.
They've got A players.
Yeah.
They've got Genji, George Ford...
I wouldn't say Youngs. I was going to say Youngs, but no, I'm not going to say Youngs.
Liebenberg and Visa.
Yeah. They've got about four or five
A players.
That guy that's starting Loosehead, I forgot his name now. De Bruyne.
De Bruyne, yeah.
Like, he's quality.
He'd be more quality if he's staying. He's off, isn't he?
Yeah. But he's really good.
Joe Hayes looked good.
Yeah, Joe Hayes looked awesome. Like, genuinely, I think they could genuinely competing with Genge and Cole. Wigglesworth genuinely competing with Youngs.
Wales.
You're right. Visa.
And Van Portfleet.
Portfleet as well, yeah.
Youngs might be third choice at Leicester.
Yeah.
Well, Freddie Stewart has to be spoken about now as the heir to Mike Brown, I think.
Where have you been? I've been saying this for ages.
Yeah. And Tommy Freeman.
Freeman's ace.
Yeah,
Freeman's
awesome, although he took a bad knock, Freeman.
That's a good little little battle, isn't it? Like, because just up
Stewart
the road,
Freeman.
Northampton, yeah. Leicester.
Freeman was at Leicester as well as a kid.
What?
I know. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
Oh, the players Leicester have let go. But what Steve Borthwick's doing, and, you know... I even said to him in the post-game chat, which didn't go out on air because we...
Of course you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, because we passed on the game. And I said to him, you know, you've given these young guys an opportunity. They've taken it and they've, you know, now got experience of winning big knockout games. I said a question which revolved around that, and he actually said, I don't mean to be pernickety, Tim, but I haven't given the players an opportunity. They've earned it.
Ah.
Which I thought was I thought it was a great answer.
It is a little bit semantic.
I like the philosophy of what he said.
Empowering the players rather than
I think the players genuinely believe you play well. Doesn't matter. I don't care what your name is.
Well,
you'll get picked
to a degree. I mean, George Ford plays. You know, you can be whoever you want. George Ford is playing in that team. But yeah, everything else is up for grabs.
Johnny McPhillips last couple of weeks has looked class.
So there's an interesting one you mentioned, Johnny McPhillips. I was watching him play, and I thought he is competent and he's made no mistakes. But I can see him thinking. Like, I can almost see him changing his mind, and he still made the right decision. But he is a not a vast step. He is clearly the understudy to George Ford.
Of course.
I don't think he's ready to lead a team yet.
No.
He did very well. He's a very good player.
It does help. It's all right. He had a great game. It does help when your pack is going forward consistently. Yeah. And did you notice the Newcastle loose head situation?
Yeah.
They're copying you, JB, or some of their players are clearly been listening to you.
Mullapola flips over, didn't he?
Ah, for more cash, I hope.
Well, so Mullapola started...
And the hooker's being converted to loosehead, Kyle Cooper.
Yeah.
Good for him.
So Trevor Davidson gets injured after, whatever it was, 10, 12 minutes. Kyle Cooper is on the bench as a loosehead, but he's a hooker, 32-year-old South African hooker who has converted to playing loosehead. He then goes down, and Mark Tampin, their tight head, reserve tight head, comes on and plays loose head.
No. Tampin came on and played tight head.
Mullapola switched sides.
Yeah, can do both, actually.
Yeah,
Mullapola has switched sides.
It's the range.
And I think there is some good news as well coming out of Newcastle, which is we thought we might have seen the last of John Welsh. Not career ending, 4 weeks.
Oh, so awesome.
He is back soon, which hopefully he gets a shot at Genge.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's another way they can play each other.
It can't come fast enough because they got pumped.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this is...
They got pumped, but it was literally just the scrum, pretty much.
The scrum was the...
That was it, because they look good.
Yeah, and Newcastle were targeting this. All week they were talking about physicality and taking them on up front and this, that and the other, because they know from the last game they didn't... Well, they did terribly, frankly. So this was a chance to put a marker down. And I think this game was probably won in the first five minutes when they realised that they weren't up to the task. And Mark Wilson goes off with a yellow card. And after that, it's just all the way downhill. And they know what's coming next in the second half is going to be worse than what's coming in the first half, which is a horrible place to be.
Can I just say, George Martin's 19. I think there are other players that deserved an England cap before him.
Agreed.
That's not to take it away from him whatsoever. Yes. I've just got to say, though, the guy's 19.
Some people think...
And he's mixing it.
Yeah, some people think he's going to be a future great. I don't know about that yet, but it's interesting that people say that.
Yeah, and Eddie Jones, if nothing else, is very good at identifying talent.
But do you know who I thought was very good, more than him, was the... Is it Wells, the second row? Who's the other?
Harry Wells.
Harry Wells, who is a solid, very solid second row back row.
There's a second. Who is the second row this weekend?
So it's
Wells and Henderson.
Cameron
Henderson.
Yeah, Wells. Wells is one that impressed.
He sometimes plays on the flank as well.
Yeah.
Him, Potter, Maroney.
Really,
look out for Dan Kelly. Very good.
I now actually kind of agree with you, JB, and I'm willing to say I've underestimated Steve Borthwick and Leicester, and I think that they will challenge for top four.
Yeah, I think so.
This season.
I think that if anyone can, I think they will.
Yeah. It's not going to be Northampton, is it?
They're 8 points off top four.
They're pretty formidable.
Yeah.
And it's just the fact that it doesn't seem to matter who plays. They just kind of perform.
Yeah. Because we did see that last season. We all criticised Borthwick for his kind of A team and B team. There was the best team who could maybe, if they did well, have a shot of winning a game, and the B team who couldn't do anything. But he's, whatever he's done, he's used that to assess it, used it to harden them. He now does have that. It's not an A and a B team. He has the kind of one and a half, with the exception of a handful of players.
So I very much admire what he's done this season. I still think what he did last season was absolutely dreadful.
Because I agreed with that last season, but now you can look it through the lens of, well, has that allowed him to do this?
My problem is, I think you're absolutely right. I think it has allowed him to do this. I think it's allowed him to identify some talent. But I think that process also threw away a lot of talent, and that's a problem that I have. Because we name so many lads at Leicester have been through and discarded in the past. And how much of it is to do with that sort of mindset? You've already sunk. And by the way, we're not going to play you in the first team. We're going to play you in a bunch of kids. And we'll just see which ones survive this brutal onslaught from the Premiership first team. I don't think it's a good way to develop your players. I think you've got to drip feed them in. The guys who've succeeded in Leicester would have succeeded anyway. The ones that they've let go, they'll never know. So it could have been Tommy Freeman. It could have been Alex Lewington back in the day. It could have been so many players that have left Leicester. So I still think what he did last season was completely wrong, but you've got to give him credit for how he's... Two things can be true at once.
He's got to this point, which for the last two or three seasons, I did not see Leicester getting to this point any time soon.
No, I didn't, to be fair.
It's some turnaround from where they have been, for sure. I think Austin Healey made one good point in comms when he said... There's a lot of those young guys, and they have, and as we've talked about before, they won the under-18 championship a couple of years in a row, a few years ago, and having a whole bunch of lads that have come through, grown up together, lived together, and are coming into the first team together. Mm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, isn't it? It's very cool.
Same at Northampton and other clubs, we've seen it as well. And also, the other thing I noticed, just on mentioning Austin Healey, is just I was struck, because I was able to walk around the ground a lot, and there's no fans or anything there. There's no pictures of him anywhere.
Really?
He won the Heineken Cup two times. I suddenly thought, I can't see Oz in any of these pictures. And I looked. I made a mental note to keep an eye out at all the pictures. I couldn't see a single picture of Austin Healey.
That's astonishing, because I would have thought a club like Leicester, or any club actually, would quite like Austin Healey to be linked to them. Particularly now, in these economic times.
I would have thought so.
And you'd also want his know-how, both rugby and business.
If I was Oz, I'd be thinking, right, I'm going to buy that club.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the debt.
No, probably not, actually. Probably not.
But Oz, when we watched over last summer, Lockdown 1, when we were watching the historic games, we watched the Stade Francais Leicester 2001. Austin Healey was the best player on the pitch.
Yeah.
But he was quality. Quite a lot of stick online. And there's a correlation between people who have no idea about rugby and those that criticise Austin Healey. I'm sure he does say a few silly things occasionally, but my God, some of the things he picks up are just unreal.
I would say on that is be careful what you wish for, because if you watch football ever, and I don't watch much football punditry, but one of the things which unites the majority of football punditry is no one says anything of any substance or interest or opinion.
Although,
certainly no opinion. And I quite like... Austin Healey is one of the few people that actually doesn't care what people think, so he says what he thinks.
Well, he doesn't really need the job, does he?
Doesn't he? So he can watch rugby.
Yeah, he's there for the best seats in the house, I guess. But yeah, he's remarkably good at his job.
Yeah, I really like his analysis. He does occasionally get something wrong and then won't admit that he's got it wrong. Like you call it, oh, that's never a forward pass. No, I'm not having that. Not a forward pass. He's gone 4 yards forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's spot on.
Well, so much didn't go well too well. Well, I guess you're going to think it went all right.
The Ulster game was a great game.
My word, what goes on at Northampton?
It was a brilliant game.
That was a good game of rugby.
It was a good game of rugby.
It was a good game of rugby.
Northampton didn't implode or do anything particularly
bad.
They had a good first half. Tamana Harrison was awesome. They really took it to Ulster in the first 20 minutes and looked really good. And Ulster weathered the storm and then had too much for them over 80 minutes.
You need to beat Northampton two ways, effectively. You need to... number one, make sure Tamara Harrison is never on his feet. So you've got to be lying on him after carries. You can't let him get up. You just can't let him carry the ball, because that's what they need him to carry the ball. And if he does carry the ball, you need to meet him head on. Once you've neutralised him, there's pretty much no go forward.
Ludlam's a good carrier.
Oh, actually, that's a good point. Ludlam's ace.
I think Northampton might have some of the scariest potential like UFC converts. Tamana Harrison and Lewis Ludlam.
Corny Laws.
Oh, Corny Laws. I mean, that would be frightening.
Yeah.
There is that. And also without Corny Laws, they do lack a bit of edge. There's no two ways about it. They're lovely with ball in hand, though. And they can play. So when you
are they the best team with ball in hand now?
That's a good question.
Because you always said that was Sale.
Well, it was Sale a few years ago. They can turn it on occasionally. I probably think it is Northampton. They've got so many good ball handlers, and that system that they play is quite nice. Where they failed completely was giving the ball to Ulster in any way, because they didn't really want to tackle. They didn't want to meet them at the game line. They didn't want to collide, and it was so obvious.
It's because you've got McCloskey and Stockers.
McCloskey and Stockers. Down. Curtsy.
No, Curtsy.
Oh, no, not Curtsy.
Timoney was playing. Curtsy. I think if Curtsy was still available, Ulster might be favourites for this. Mm. He's a huge loss.
Yeah.
Curtsy.
Yeah, he is.
Really good, though.
But you know, the element of physicality, which I thought Ulster absolutely dominated. Northampton at was around the breakdown, so they'd have their jacklers in or they'd go and defend the breakdown, and from absolute miles out, this is how I remember it, it could be completely different if I watched it now, the Ulster clear outs were brutal, and they were just smashing people out of the way, and I think that has a knock on effect for when you get back in the line, you're like nursing an injury or you think bloody hell that was quite something which hit me then, and then you're back in the line and then McCloskey's down your channel and then you try and get over the breakdown again and you get smashed again, and they didn't want to know
that. Also the clear outs, and it's the clear outs that allows the quick ball, and Cooney and Billy Burns are so good when they get good break the gain line quick ball. Those two are so dangerous.
Yeah,
they can get the best of the talent outside them. McCloskey, Hume is a really good player. Stockers looks to be close to being back to his best. Mike Lowry is very
dangerous. They made it very
easy
for Stockers at times, though. Like that kick into the corner. I mean, he had so much time to execute the kick.
Oh, it's an awesome kick.
Well, there's nobody there.
You see, he's still got to do it.
Yeah, he's still. I mean, I could have executed that kick.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a good game. They look like, I'd say they're favourites. Would you not say they're favourites?
But Leicester,
away
at Leicester. I was thinking, when I was watching the draw, I was like, who do I prefer? I definitely prefer to be at home, so that's struck off. I'd probably prefer to play Bath.
Yeah. But
Bath are very, very physical, and Bath want to bring that physicality. Like they just keep scoring. They'll score either wonder tries from their remarkable individual brilliance of their outside backs, or they'll just grind it out with their tight five.
Yeah, like, nothing in between, is there?
Yeah,
there's not no balance to what they do.
Well, the only thing that's in between is Mercer, who's like this. He can do a little bit of both, but they're not quite. They've got those two extremes, and very little in between. I thought Will Stewart was awesome in
Will
this game.
Will Stewart pretty much single-handedly won him the game last week. In fact, he did all right this week too.
He did very well this week.
Like, you're talking about dominant tight head props. He's not a massive man, but he dominates the games. In fact, they can thank him for beating Zeba single-handedly, as far as I
know. I've got the Bath socks on today.
Nice.
I've had loads of people ask me. I've completely forgotten the company again that does the.
Well, let's not mention their names until they give us some money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or more freebies, so me and you could be wearing them, Jay.
Exactly. But
London Irish West deservedly beat London Irish East.
They absolutely imploded, though, didn't they, London Irish? I mean, I love Albert Tuasui, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Him running at Orlando.
Oh, God, Orlando Bailey.
I was going to say Orlando Bloom, then Orlando Bailey.
Yeah.
Orlando Bailey.
I'd love to see him run at Orlando Bloom.
I've just got... I think it looked very much the same as when he ran at Orlando Bailey. Orlando Bloom could actually play him. It was... I like how he carries the ball. Love the build of the guy, love the beard, but he dropped and made so many mistakes when it really counted. Right at the end, I thought, oh, that you can't be doing that. You can't do it. They had some really good phases of play, London Irish. But just, you know, when Bath turn it on, because they have got the actual personnel to do it, it looks good. Like, I don't, you know, I don't give Stuart Cooper any credit for that pick by Zach Mercer and then
the Faletau shit.
What do you mean? That's a training ground move, that?
Oh, yeah.
Eight go blind, offload, kick, chase, score. There you go, done.
Important.
Straight off the training ground.
Is that the one where did Thokkonen and Singer go in the corner off that one? Was that the one where they switched to the other wing?
Yes. I think that's right.
So, you know, I think actually Bath. So, let's just stop a second. Let's go back to last week. Who was favourite for this competition? I think last week, judging by all those games, it would have been Ulster. Yeah, they look like the most impressive. Fast forward a week. Oh, okay. Leicester look awesome.
Leicester look great.
Oh, they look good. They look awesome.
They look good. Yeah.
Ulster, a very impressive win.
Yeah.
So, those two meetings are going to be, that's going to be a cracker. And then you've got Montpellier Bath. And these the styles are perfect for each other.
Well, they are. And it's how much talent can you get on the pitch, but make sure it's in a way that it doesn't quite gel? they're the best two teams in Europe for achieving
how
that.
How little output can you get out of
so much talent?
Did Alex Lazowski play for Montpellier? This is the only game I didn't see.
I didn't see it at all. I'll just pull up the lineup now. Lazowski played 10.
Did he?
Yeah, which he has been doing a bit recently. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Apparently he's not enjoying life over there, is what I hear.
He's on loan, isn't he?
Yeah, he's definitely coming back.
Mark
McCall this weekend said, Nick Tompkins has now come back.
Mm. Yeah.
And he said all players that have been out on loan, Max Malins, Ben Earl, Alex Lazowski, will be going back.
So there's a few interesting bits.
Ezeque as well, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, is he on loan as well?
Northampton.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realise that they were all on loan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Spencer's full-time.
Ben Spencer's was a permanent,
that's
wasn't
permanent,
it?
Yeah, but all the people that were out on loan will definitely be coming back, Mark McCall said.
And then there's the two, there's Cruis and Goode, who are in Japan.
Yes.
Which I
imagine they could get them back if they want.
I think they are coming back.
I think Cruis is definitely coming back.
No, Goode's definitely coming back. I wasn't sure about...
I'm sure Cruis is coming back.
And how do they get them back with like a massive light in the sky? When it's time. Good. I'm glad to hear that they're all reassembling.
Getting the old band back together.
Just on this, so two interesting pieces of news that came out of this week. One was Tompkins coming back off loan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he has basically had a horrible time at Dragons. I mean, I'm not saying he personally has a horrible time. I'm sure he's enjoyed it. He hasn't looked like an international to me, and he hasn't looked like the guy that was in Saracens.
I can't say I've seen him playing at Dragons, to be honest.
I've seen him twice, and I didn't think much of it. So,
playing outside Jamie Roberts?
Yeah, and I just think, you know, you've taken a guy from a very successful place, in a great system, great coaches and processes and all the rest of it, and you put him in Newport. And I wonder why that didn't work so well. And I worry about people like Thomas Francis when he leaves Exeter to go to Cardiff Blues. You know, is he going to be playing for Cardiff Blues, or is he going to be using the Welsh calls? I got no idea. How is this all going to pan out? So I don't like that.
Did you see the Saracens team? They absolutely pumped Bedford.
No, did they win?
Yeah,
I knew they were. What were they like?
54-13.
Like there was 2-1.
I did see that first four tries was a Marrow brace and a Billy brace.
Yeah, hardly fair, is it?
Yeah.
Elliot Daly wearing 13.
Nice. Oh. I mean, against Bedford as well.
But it's
Did Bedford have any players of note? Because they usually have a few lads that are either used to be famous or soon to be famous.
Yeah, and they've had. They've had historically links with both Northampton and Saracens. Yeah.
And Leicester.
Mm.
They're 10 full internationals in their starting lineup, Saracens did. And I'll tell you what, that Iogun, the 19-year-old prop who, when Northampton had no props, came on and had a great game down Sandy Park when Northampton won, and he's on loan at Bedford.
Good lad.
Okay.
So he...
Oh, yeah, Connor Tupai. As well, Paul Tupai's son, who was also at Northampton,
and Reuben Bird Tullock, who was at Saracens.
So they've also had, and I'm trying to think of other things.
And Will Carrick Smith, who I get confused with Will Goodridge Clark.
Yeah,
who Will Carrick Smith was at London Welsh during the infamous.
And I think Corporal Bean is on loan from Northampton to Glasgow as well.
What's his first name?
Lewis.
Lewis Bean.
Lewis Bean, yeah. Oh, I nearly interviewed him, actually. Ooh. I should definitely follow up on it.
What did you nearly do, Phil? Have you nearly done anything?
Nothing of note. Nothing I'd like to raise now.
Oh, I've got a good guest on the Rugby Dungeon tomorrow.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You might have heard of him. A young lad from Northampton. Dan Bigger?
Bigger!
Oh, yeah. I've heard he could do all right. If he knuckles down.
Yeah, back up to, what's his name?
Grayson.
Grayson in Northampton.
Yeah,
so.
Up to Sheedy for Wales as well.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to that one. I'm massively looking forward to that one.
Did you see your your beloved Canes went down.
Oh, my God.
27-30. That looks like it would have been a good game to watch.
So, Super Rugby Aotearoa, both games were decided by the golden points and death match. Both
really?
Were a tie after 80 minutes. And both the Chiefs versus the Cheeselanders, Chiefs Blues, and my beloved Canes, they're playing against like an all-black tight five with nobodies. But the Canes outside backs are just unreal. Usen, Surveyor, Jordy Barrett, Laumapi's explosivity for his try. They're so good, but Crusaders are just... They're basically the All Blacks.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Amazing game. Very, very actually good result considering... a much closer result than I was expecting, albeit Canes could have won it at the end. So a little bit disappointed.
So I guess we've spoken about almost everything today. Almost.
Almost.
One last story, and I suspect you two will be wearing a lot of egg on your face now. Remember that I mentioned that there is an underhand conspiracy of the RFU? Well, enter the Kraken. As Donald Trump's lawyers might say, Matt Proudfoot,
release the Kraken, JB. Come on,
yeah. So Matt Proudfoot nipped up to Sale this week to speak to James Harper. Okay, fine. Bevan Rod, yeah, sure, okay. Rafi Quirk makes sense.
Quirk.
Thank you. And Josh Beaumont. It would be wonderful if Josh Beaumont could get a cap. And any other guesses? Any other guesses?
AJ.
Not AJ, sadly. Not AJ. I've forgot his name now.
Ewan Ashman.
Ewan Ashman.
Scotland's Ewan Ashman.
If there's ever any proof that they are targeting dual qualified players without any... Well, then there's no intention to play him. But yet another one. Go on.
No, I was going to say, yes. Okay. Targeting players that are dual qualified is one thing, and I've never denied that might be a factor. You might go, yeah, we'll bring Cam Redpath in and have a look at him because you know we might have to make up our mind on this guy.
What if they told Cam Redpath he was special with X Factor?
They probably did,
because
he is.
Well, that would be a fair shout, right. Actually.
So there's a different...
Any chance that Ewan Ashman is X Factor special?
I've got no. I've got so exactly. So little game tape.
I haven't seen enough of him to make that decision for myself, but I'm sure people in the right places do. But I'm willing to believe that dual qualified players might get looked at in a slightly different way. The evidence is overwhelming on the fact that does not translate into giving caps to people. Because there are so many examples of people who do not get caps and go on and play for other countries.
Yeah, so this is exactly my point, which is they come in, they distort the relationship between that player and his pathway through to international, and it takes about...
Distort?
Because if you have a clear route from where you are now to play for Scotland, that's always been your plan, and then the RFU show up and go, do you know what, you're special, and we're going to bring you into camp and we're going to have a look at you and we think you could potentially be a 50 cap international, this, that and the other.
Right.
I don't think that's right. I think if they are actually interested in a player, they say, we like you, you come into camp and you get a cap. You know, there is enough evidence of what these players are like. If you go and watch them, you can get an idea. And do you know what?
This is a bit like saying So, at school, I can remember fancying a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't interested. Uh-huh. And then I started like going out with someone else. Uh-huh. And then suddenly that girl was interested.
Okay.
And then, but that would be like me going, "You're really out of order for doing that." It's just Actually, I'm trying to work out the analogy. That's not.
I know we could.
No, I guess. Okay, let me just.
We can definitely put it down through a different paradigm to get the analogy there. We just need to look at it from a different angle, but no, we're nearly there with it.
No. So what? All I would say is, if you
what we're saying is, England are a jealous girl.
No, what I'm saying is, if an adult, a grown adult,
But they're not that grown.
No, well, I don't
care.
They're
not that grown.
I don't care. If a grown adult that can do whatever they want and has total agency over their own life and future,
but that's why they have agents.
Or well,
to advise them, they've got. It's not just their decisions; it's their agents' advice as well.
If grown adults with agency over their own.
And their club's advice.
Yeah, exactly.
Even more people to advise them on what they're doing.
And if these grown adults who can go and do anything they want to and have total agency over their life get their head turned by a few nice words from someone, then maybe they need to give their head a wobble.
So, you make a point. Should all players assume that Matt Proudfoot is lying? Then, because a few nice words, if they give your head a wobble because Matt Proudfoot has told you you're a special player and you've got a future with England. If I was the club, so there's a couple of problems here. If I was the club, I think I'd be putting a protection policy around my players, which is by all means come watch them. If you want to watch them, bring your binoculars, bring a pen and pencil. If you've got any questions about the player, ask the coach. Don't ask the player. And the reason I think that is fair is, first of all, I don't want the player thinking he's going to be playing for England because Matt Proudfoot showed up. Second of all, if Matt Proudfoot says, look, we think you're good, we've got a good handful of caps, 30 caps, I would say, for you. I mean, you really could be the future here. When that player goes back to his club, bearing in mind, Ewan Ashman's like the third choice hooker, right?
Third choice Scottish hooker.
and at sale too. When it comes to renegotiation time, Ewan Ashman's probably thinking, well, I could get paid like an academy lad, or I could get paid like a third-choice hooker, but actually, I think I'm worth 50 caps, because that's how Matt Proudfoot has valued
me. But then that's not a... Like, Sale can say, no, we're not paying you that.
Yeah, it's all...
So then you've got base, a version of mismatch theory. When this player's got this elevated impression of what he is, hawking himself around Premiership Club saying, yeah, I'm a 50-cap hooker. And like, no, mate, you're still exactly... And this has happened to Sale three times now. If anyone can work out why Sam Moore went to England camp, I will give you a lot of money. Eventually leaves.
Eddie Jones has done this with so many of the apprentice things. He has a look at them and you never see him again.
I think you should stop it. I think if he wants to talk to them, if he's got a plan to cap them, bring them in. But he has to show
it's up to him what he wants to do.
In that case, it's clubs. And also,
what do you mean up to the clubs? You could also argue, if you look at it again, if you take that paradigm, look at it from a different angle, that would almost be predatory of the clubs to go, we don't want to pay this person what he's potentially worth.
No, you absolutely pay them what they're worth. But so in the Ashman scenario. Let's just assume he is as good as they say. So let's just give it a different player. Because I don't want to say he's not that good. I'm just saying, give it
player
a,
X.
Yeah,
player Joe, X. Joe Bloggs.
Right? Because he's dual qualified, they've approached him. And that's the problem, isn't it? If he really is that good, like a George Martin, by all means, tell him he's that good. If you're just approaching this player because he's dual qualified and you don't want someone else to have him, well, that's wrong. So I can't get on board with that, and I think that is happening.
I'm still not sure. I still don't think there's a smoking gun on that. There is evidence of dual qualified players going into England camp. There is lots of evidence of non-dual qualified players going into England camp and never being seen again.
I mean, the Paolo Adogu thing is utterly bizarre. For Italy.
No,
but then he was injured.
He was injured in camp. That's the reason he didn't. Well, he didn't play for Wasps.
That's not true.
No. It turns out the reason he didn't play for Wasps in that it happened the week after the England camp as well. He didn't play. He didn't start. Didn't play for Wasps on his own say so. The week in between the last two games, he didn't play for Wasps. Because he didn't feel right.
That's not what I've heard.
Well, that is what I've heard.
Off who? Adogu,
I think he will. If there was a conspiracy, they'd be capping him. I have no doubt that Eddie wanted to have a look at him because he is a fairly unique talent.
And he's playing very well.
He was playing great guns. He was actually...
he was definitely fit, you know. He was definitely good to go.
But early in the season, he was the form 13 in the league.
Yeah.
So he got called up to England on the back of that. I think Eddie's had a look at him.
Just clarify two things on here, which I know for certain, absolutely for certain. It wasn't his own say-so that he didn't get released. Mm. That is definitely true.
Mm.
Unless there's different people in different camps telling us different things, yeah. Which is absolutely a possibility.
I've got no idea, but what... From what I've seen, and it's happened to lots of players, both dual qualified and non-dual qualified players, Eddie likes to get them in, see the whites of their eyes, test them. And we spoke a few weeks ago about the data that he gathers on players, rightly or wrongly, because I think it depends on how data-driven he's been. You could make very good decisions or some bad decisions, like Don Brandt was the example that you gave, Tim. But I think he does it to lots of players. I don't, from what I've seen, I don't think there's a smoking gun on the conspiracy.
But let me just paint a picture for you, right? You're a club. You spend a lot of money on your academy. The kids are coming through and you don't really care who they're qualified for. They're just kids that come through your...
You want the best kids. You want the most talent.
You don't really care where they come from. They're all, for the majority, they're local, but some might be dual qualified, some might not be. They come through your system and they're all worth a certain amount of money. And you know they're worth a certain amount of money because you see them every day and you kind of... You know what that looks like.
You know what, a 22-year-old hooker who performs at X rate.
Yeah.
You know what he's worth.
So then you've got all your boys that go through the England under 20 system. No issues there. That's fine. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the England coaches descend and the dual qualified lads are walk through a door. The guys who are English qualified and actually starting for you, like Curtis Langdon, are completely ignored. And they're told, look, you're special. Yes, you've created friction between. Not friction, but you know, you would be thinking, why is it not me? I'm better than him.
But didn't Proudfoot see Rafi Quirk?
Quirk.
Sorry, but Rafi de Quirk.
Yeah, yeah. But like, Langdon is a 23-year-old English hooker. So I think, ironically, what England have done here, rather than trying to be smart, I mean, if you buy this theory, of course, rather than being smart and trying to... stop other teams getting these players, they've actually given an incentive to players up and down the country to declare dual qualification in order to get spoken to by English coaches. Because if I was Langdon now, I think I would slowly and quietly announce that he's Irish qualified, and he is Irish qualified, and they're very interested in him, and then see how quickly it would take Matt Proudfoot to drive to his house.
But if I was a...
He's not Irish qualified, but I might start this rumour.
if I was a sale coach... And something incentivizes my young hooker to train as hard as he possibly can and play his best possible rugby, I would be absolutely delighted.
You would be, right? But we've got three players, or no, two players, right, who've walked out the door because their value does not match the club's value. And in the case of, say, Redpath, I think probably they undervalued him.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But you can only say someone walked out the door because they're undervalued because someone else valued them more.
Yeah.
Which means they did undervalue them. Yeah. Fact.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I agree
but
with
that. But that's got nothing to do with Matt Proudfoot or Eddie Jones.
No, but like on the Sam Moore front, you've got a very promising young man coming through. He went into England camp. He was never the same. Now he doesn't really start for Cardiff Blues. He sits on the bench there. So is that a case?
So Sale valued him correctly then.
Yeah. But are you?
No, what I'm saying is,
are you taking a correlation and making a causation? He went to England camp and he was never the same again.
No.
As in they broke him.
No, he just thought he was too good.
And then that's his error
because that's on him.
Right, yeah. You said if I've got a coach that comes in and makes my players train really hard to be the best they can be. You're absolutely right. That is awesome. Particularly if they end up to be Cam Redpath.
Yeah.
But if the opposite happens and they act as if they, you know, in that way, but they don't deserve it.
Well,
yeah. That's just on the player, isn't it?
Yeah, that's on the player. Because I'd say Johnny Wilkinson, it wouldn't have mattered what anyone said to him. He would have always been the player that he was. And so there's that phrase like, I can't think of the exact words, but basically it's about hard times don't develop character, they reveal character. And I think it's things like this. When Matt Proudfoot comes to your training ground and has a chat with you, it doesn't it doesn't change your character. Nature. It reveals your character. And probably, if Ewan Ashman is someone who could be an international for England or Scotland, it will make no difference whatsoever to him. And maybe the reason why Sam Moore is not playing for Cardiff Blues is because he is the sort of person whose head swelled at the at going to England camp.
I mean, you can't. I don't think you can say it's all one. You know, you can't say that this is a mechanism that you use in order to flush out players.
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, because
I'm saying the good ones, it will be irrelevant.
Because in this scenario, what you're saying is, A, if a coach comes in and it makes the player train really hard, it's great. But B, if a coach comes in and it makes the player go off the rails, well, that's also great because they would never have made it anyway.
You learn faster.
Yeah, you learn faster. So it's actually an unadulterated good to have the coach come in and talk to your players, because you'll either improve their training or... You get rid of them. I would say, actually, what's wrong with the third way, which is let them develop properly?
I would suggest that the players that end up becoming international players, it wouldn't make any difference. Well, not wouldn't make any difference. They might say, I think you should improve this and work on this. And George Martin said that to me in the post-match chat, man of the match chat at Leicester the other day. He said, I've been into England camp and I've been working on my ball carrying, and it's good to transition that into
first. I agree that there are some lads who always make it, but there's a lot of lads that coaches have missed and coaches get wrong all the time.
Of course.
And you know, it does derail. I mean, you know, I do not know, for instance, the story behind Byrne. What's it? Tyburn.
Yeah.
It is Tyburn.
The lock. Munster lock back row.
Got let go by Leinster.
I have no idea what happened.
Leinster.
That's an example of a coach getting it horribly wrong.
Or a player
developing, blossoming later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you affect that player's development? Because there's a great example there of a late bloomer. You can affect a player's development negatively or positively. I don't think either of you are right saying it's an unadulterated good having these guys come into camp. I think they should be talking. In fact, if I had a club, I would have a player welfare policy that no England coaches are talking to my players unless they give me solid proof that they are serious about
helping them. I think if you did do that, then you would lose so many players by people going, why is he trying to control stuff that's got nothing to do with him?
Well, it's for their own good. There is no way, because I'm just not having... If you want to talk to my senior guys, you can. But the academy guys coming through, if they're in Scotland, if they're part of the Scottish camp, then you can't. I wouldn't let them talk to them. No way. If they want to change allegiances off their own back, by all means do so. But you can't do it after a chat with Matt Proudfoot, who says you're a special player.
But you don't even want nationality to mean anything. You want any player to be able to play for any country.
Look, you know, it's slightly different. slightly different scenario there. But you know, under the rules that we have, that's the thing that a club can influence. And I am absolutely certain that I wouldn't want. You know, if you have a club, I mean, you say, yeah, you know, you'd lose loads and loads of players. But I don't imagine Sale are particularly friendly towards or Newcastle or anyone else, particularly friendly about Gregor Townsend coming every other week, or, you know, Wayne Pivak's men or whoever else it is, or the Italy coaches rocking up.
I don't know, Baxter says he wants, and I've heard a lot of other coaches, McCall as well, saying we want all of our players to be competing for international honours.
They want lots of international standard players. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
But you can't
have one without the other.
They're telling academy lads they're internationals just because they're dual qualified. I think that's the thing.
That's the sticking point, isn't it?
Well, I think that is the thing. You don't.
That's the fundamental crux of the difference of opinion.
You're not an international player until you've not only been called into England camp, but you've also been called into an England match day squad, and you've also been let onto the pitch. That's the only time you become an international, and there's so thinking that someone having a chat with you on a training ground means that I'm an England quality player.
Do you know what I think it's weird to say?
I would say that's a deficiency in a player, and I don't believe good players actually think that.
I would agree that, because it's all conditional. We spoke about CJ Sander coming over to Ireland the other week, and he might have been viewed as a project player, but there was no way. Everything is conditional until you're in that match day 23, until you've got the cap. Nothing is guaranteed. And if their ego is inflated by someone blowing smoke up their arse, then that's their issue.
If you two are identifying the fact that you're not an international player until you pull on the jersey, I don't really think that any international coach should be going around to kids saying, if they did say this, of course, you know, you're worth X amount of caps. I think that is a very fair point.
Well,
even Harry Redknapp would say that about the kids coming through the academy. You never tell them that they're going to be good. If they're going to be get capped, they're going to be capped. But you shouldn't be going around telling players are going to get caps.
I can't imagine it would have been
you're going to get
50 caps. It's always conditional.
Well,
If someone takes
50 is a very odd number, isn't it? To float out there. But if that was said, I don't know if that was said.
I think if Warren Gatland had done what you're suggesting, it would have been a brilliant move and a masterstroke and very important. I think this is the Eddie Jones. Anything connected with Eddie Jones,
and I guess,
is automatically
even
bad.
If I did ban them, they'd probably get their mobile phone numbers. I guess I'd just have to ban phones.
What an authoritarian regime you're operating when you become DOR of a rugby club.
Hand over all of your email passwords, your mobile phone. They have burners, which I reissue at the end at the start of every week.
Who's watching?
You could honestly have a job running a
Sage.
Giant tech tech company at the minute, a Silicon Valley tech company. That kind of vision.
I was more thinking a Soviet Union gulag.
Well, it's like potato potato, isn't it, at the minute?
About the same thing.
Put your phones in the bin. You can't speak to anyone outside of this room.
No international coaches.
Right. I enjoyed the chat, and it's an interesting one, and maybe you'll be proved right.
I'm definitely right. Although I've been told by some people in very high authority I'm 100% wrong, which just proves I'm right.
Yeah, that should only cement your resolve that you are even more right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for listening, and thank you for watching. We have had some compliments on the quality of Wi-Fi.
Yes!
Oh, amazing, JB.
Compared to previous stuff.
Cat 8. Have I told you about my Cat 8?
You mentioned Cat 8. Yeah. Tell me more about Cat 8.
We'll talk about it later.
Fergus says, I see your Wi-Fi is now up to Worcester Academy standards.
That's right.
Oh, we're not there yet. That is premium.
When we get there, I'll be hanging around on my own after the podcast.
Do we have many live comments?
Michael Martin has said, as a Leinster fan, I would disagree on Leinster rolling La Rochelle over, and he says he worries that La Rochelle will tear Leinster's defenceless wingers apart. Raymond Rule. That's why I came up with the quiz, because I thought the name reminded me of Roman Reigns, the WWE wrestler, and that got me thinking about nicknames.
Not Ja Rule.
Did he see the announcement just before we finish about the South Africa camps that they're going to have before the Lions?
No, I am wondering how they're going to get, well, even marginally competitive, actually.
I just want to mention a couple of people who are long-time listeners, Tier 2 Tour legends, Gavin Doyle, congratulations to your boys in blue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 100%. He wants Leinster v Toulouse. That's what I want, the five-star showdown.
Has to be.
The build-up for that would be incredible, so yeah, totally. And lots of comments about take your shoes off, JB.
Oh, yeah, I've got one last shout-out from one... It's not even a shout-out, but one last thing to say about a game. Houston Sabercats got their first win.
Ah, yes.
I'm going to pay a bit of attention to the MLR in the next couple of weeks.
Because
the games are being streamed free, aren't they?
And they're
on the app. Although they've not... The MLR... put a request for information into them about their salary cap, and they've not got back to me yet.
40? Oh, yeah, we've still got this, haven't we?
Yeah. We have, yeah, but there's no definitive. So, like, Premier Rugby, in fairness to them, they published the detailed salary cap so you can run through and understand exactly what is in and out. It's pretty opaque at MLR because there's somewhere between about £35,000 and £50,000 salary cap, but there's no way that Chris Robshaw or Adam Ashley Cooper and Gitto are, those two in particular, living in LA on 40 grand.
They might be having their digs paid for.
Well, and this is why I'm thinking about the salary cap, because if it was in the Premiership, that would count as salary.
So
it'd be 40 grand including digs, etc.
Yeah.
Some of these comments are quite funny. My personal favourite, which just made me chuckle, this week's rugby, .. Dortmund buses.
Yes, that'll be the name of the episode. What did I interrupt you saying a second ago, Phil? Sorry.
South Africa are talking about gathering their players, which obviously, because some play in South Africa, some play in Europe, and some play in Japan, is very difficult. So they're talking. The phrase that they've used is an incredibly sinister phrase, which is they are going to have alignment camps.
Alignment camps.
Is there anything more sinister than a South African alignment camp?
No. Wow. Are they allowed phones?
Unlikely. You will align.
Wow, that is sinister. You're right.
So obviously they'll be meeting in a Japanese bubble.
That does sound
European.
Kind of Chinese Communist Party, doesn't it?
It sounds like JB's Rugby Club as DOR.
You wait till I'm in charge. Excellent. Right, wrap us up.
On that bombshell, we will look ahead to the games at the weekend in another podcast which is coming in your feed very soon, which will be the Q&A pod. So keep your emails, your thoughts, your questions, your starting points, your discussions, your strong zero stories.
Yes.
Hang on.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. We will do a shirt giveaway as well. Oh, I'm taking that one. Oh, yes. I'll send that.
That's yours?
I'll send that. So that's one shirt that's getting given away. Already been given away. I'll send.
Nice tight shorts.
Lovely tight shorts. The Wales one, I'll give that away. We've got another shirt to give away on the next episode. So hit subscribe in your feed wherever you get yours. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil lurking in your DMs. We're patreon.com/eggchasers. We're on YouTube. Let the boys play.
Oh, God. Look at. Oh, God. That's a terrible shot of me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.